Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report, chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I will post a link to below this interview. Mark, let's start off by recapping a lot of the economic data and inflation data that came out of the US this week. Broadly, all of this was strong and stronger than expected, especially when you look at the inflation data. I want to get your assessment of this rebound in the U.S. economy now being followed through by the data. This is expected because of especially the year-over-year comparisons of where the world was and where the U.S. was last year, usually or mostly in lockdowns, compared to now, and the potential of this just being a little sugar high rebound, or if this is sustainable growth. Mark, give us a little recap of the data we saw and where you stand on that.
Sure. So we've seen, three big chunks of data. One is the inflation number, that's the CPI, and that was well above expectations. And of course, looking at it on a year-over-year basis, to your point, there was, because last year inflation was negative, being replaced by higher numbers, so of course we get a big jump. But, you know, there's a way, another way economists look at the numbers besides year-over-year, especially in these kind of times when the base is so skewed. And that is to look at the last 3 months at an annualized pace. So you just take what happened here in the first quarter, you annualize it to get a look at this year's pace rather than comparing it to last year's skewed data. And if we do that, we're looking at something that, what this means really is in Q1, U.S. inflation, so the month-over-month numbers for the first 3 months, then annualized, is running above 5%. That's because the other source of inflation in the U.S. is not just a base effect, but the bottlenecks and supply as businesses reopen. And this was one of the points that come out in the Federal Reserve surveys that begin the new month's worth of high-frequency data. The Philadelphia Fed and the Empire State Fed surveys showed businesses reporting higher input prices. But we also had other data from retail sales. This is well above expectations and showing consumption, which is what you'd expect when people get these transfer payments from the government. Also, we've got more people working. And so that also helps to create the means by which people can go out and shop. We had very strong industrial production, manufacturing output. The reason that it wasn't stronger, and there's a reason that out of all the data, industrial production missed expectations, was really because of utility output. What happened was we had a very cold February. It really boosted utility, that's the heating. And then, of course, in March, we get the opposite. And so industrial production strong, but not quite as strong as people expected. The net impact of all this, I think, is that people are revising up Q1 GDP and they're revising up their, so the market's thinking about, I should say, is when will the Fed begin tapering? And some people are talking about some hint of it as early as June, while I see more bringing forward from next year into the September, so wait till after the summer and then begin the tapering. And the market is still pricing in the likelihood of the first Fed rate hike toward the end of next year. So the Fed says it's not coming until after 2023.
So if you think the Fed might start tapering, though, by the end of summer, or let's just say later on this year, what does tapering look like? Is that simply pulling back on a lot of their purchases rather than increasing or tinkering with the rates at all?
Good question. You're right. So at the long end of the curve, that's what we're talking about, really for the Fed to slow down its bond buying. Right now, it's $80 billion a month in treasuries, $40 billion in agencies. So maybe it slowly slows down the buying. But you're right that there is a problem brewing at the short end of the curve still. And what's happening is that because the Treasury has to bring down its cash balances at the Federal Reserve in the next couple of months, next few months, by the end of July. And they're also issuing less T-bills. Remember, last year they had a lot of T-bills, and now this money that's used for the stimulus is rolled basically into bonds. So we have less T-bills. We have reduced treasury deposits at the Federal Reserve. This is putting downward pressure on short-term rates. Here's the key to watch, is the sort of weighted average of the Fed funds rate. It's moving towards, it sounds like very small stuff, but it's moving towards 6%, 6 basis points. And the reason that is important is that when it is within 5 basis points of its floor, which is zero, the Federal Reserve finds itself compelled to prop it up. How would the Fed prop it up in this case? The Fed would prop up Fed funds to prevent it from falling through the floor by raising the floor. And so the floor is provided by the interest on reserves. And you see it in like the Wall Street Journal and on Newswire, people talking about IOER. I think that's a misnomer. That stands for interest on excess reserves. The Federal Reserve pays interest on all reserves. Right now, they can lift that a little bit, a few basis points, and the other tool they have to defend the floor of rates are reverse repos. And this is overnight reverse repos. These are also at zero. And the Fed could raise it a couple of basis points, say 5 basis points, and just to raise that floor so the Fed funds trades a bit higher. So we can see action at both ends of the curve. At the longer end, the Federal Reserve made signal at our June meeting. So we have a meeting at end of April, no meeting in May, and then a meeting in mid-June. In mid-June, they could say something to the effect, if further progress is made, we could begin tapering in Q4. And so that would lower the bar from significant progress to just further progress. So we should be looking for some word cues as the Fed prepares the market for this.
So what again is going to make the Fed do this? It's going to be the better economic data, or is it going to be something that happens in the markets in some sense? What's the impetus for the Fed starting to taper?
So the reason the Fed would taper is they've told us, in effect, that they want to see significant further improvement toward the Fed's targets. Maximum employment, price stability, which in this case means a little bit above 2%. And so what will eventually get the Fed to taper is that the economy is making significant progress. Think about what happened. We almost created 1 million jobs last month, and this month the early estimates for around 1 million jobs. We've got fiscal stimulus still to work its way through the system. We've got the wealth effect of rising stocks, rising house prices, and if some of these things about these in the art world development, it looks like the wealth effect from crypto might be lifting art prices as well. And so you got this big wealth effect, more people working, all basically fueling just this incredible strength of the U.S. economy. But to your point, the market is saying it's not going to last forever. That is, it's all the stimulus lasts, it looks like lasts for 3 to 4 quarters. So that means that by the middle of next year or so, we're going to begin talking again about why the U.S. economy can't sustain growth above 3%.
Interesting. Okay, Mark, let's talk a little bit more about the bond market then, too, because yields have been falling this week, and that is in a week when we had a lot of bond auctions. There were some of the commentators out there saying this could have been another week where the yields just skyrocketed again, but it looked like demand in these auctions almost across the board, short end to the long end, was fairly strong. What's your assessment of the auctions that happened this week? And how that actually resulted in lower, especially longer-term rates.
Yeah, it was quite amazing. You know, you think about this context of economic data. So, say 2 weeks ago, if you were talking, say, we got all this U.S. economic data, you've got the supply, you've got higher inflation. What's going to happen when you get the data, when you get more data pushing in this direction? I was one of those people that recognized that there's always these buy the rumor, sell the fact type scenarios, but the data came in stronger than expected. So what was really being discounted? And the reception at this week's auctions was really amazing. You think about how much the U.S. raised, $110 billion in coupons. And the bid-to-cover ratios, for the most part, were better than it was a month ago. And anybody who bought at this week's auctions were also making money by the end of the week. So it's quite amazing. I mean, it's quite breathtaking. I think there's three if I can figure it out right, just broadly reading, there's three explanations people are offering. One is that some of the asset managers, the bond managers, expecting higher interest rates, had been short the bonds and notes, and as they began rising, they were forced to cover, so put this under short squeeze. I'm not so crazy about this, though there might be an element of truth there. When I looked at the commitment of traders, the speculative community, what they euphemistically call non-commercials, were actually net long the 10-year note in the futures market. Another reason people gave was that, obviously, there's some people who are buying. Well, who were those buyers? Well, just yesterday morning, so that would be on Thursday morning, the Japanese report on a weekly basis their institutional portfolio flows. Foreigners buying and selling Japanese bonds and stocks, but the Japanese buying foreign bonds and stocks. And the Japanese had very strong buyers of foreign bonds. U.S. treasuries make up a big part of those world benchmarks. So people just assumed that maybe the Japanese were strong buyers. So what's interesting is after that auction ended, the U.S. government reported that we call the tick data, our treasury flow data, and the Japanese, for the sixth month out of the past seven, they were net sellers of treasuries in February. So it's hard to say what they did in, you know, this past week. It doesn't seem like their appetite's all that strong for treasuries, selling them six out of the past 7 months. It's true, though, that some of these private sector investors, when they buy U.S. treasuries, they hedge out the currency risk. And that makes the U.S. treasuries look more attractive right now. The third reason people gave for what was going on in the bond market, and for try to explain its sort of counterintuitive rally, and this is part of the whole counterintuitive aspect here, is that the strong economic data, including those CPI figures, means that people feel more confident about the Fed going to taper, reduce its bond buying later this year. And when you look at the historical record, leaving aside economic theory about what should happen when the central bank buys bonds and when it slows down its buying, if you just look at what's happened, like inductively, look at the charts, see what happens during the different time periods. One of the patterns that seems clear is that when the Federal Reserve is engaged in QE, interest rates often rise. When they taper or stop buying, interest rates tend to fall. And some people try to explain this in this very complicated mental gymnastics of what's going on in the plumbing of the positions, collateral, and the whole ecosystem. So I don't have a good explanation for this, for what happened. I don't find any of these very satisfying. It's counterintuitive. The best I could come up with, and I think we talked about this as well, the idea that what is being discounted and what the market's basically spent the last 2 months discounting, so February and March, is the idea that the U.S. economy is going to take off. And this divergence is going to grow. And so leaving aside the particular numbers, whether they're stronger or weaker than expected, the main idea has been well appreciated by the market. That is, you pump up a lot of fiscal stimulus. I mean, we're talking about $2.7 trillion between the December package and the March package. $2.7 trillion, a bit more than 10, 11, maybe 12% of GDP. And that's going to stimulate a lot of activity. And I think that the market's saying that that's all more or less priced in. And now we need the next shoe to drop. What's the next impetus? And I think next week we have very light coupon sales in the U.S. We've got about one 20-year bond being sold. And we have relatively light economic data that only features in the U.S. the PMI, the preliminary PMI reading. So the next big thing for the U.S. is probably going to be the jobs data for this month.
Mark, that's so counterintuitive, what the charts and what the data has shown, how yields move when the Fed enters and exits the bond market. It's completely opposite of what you would think, but obviously then, well, I guess that is showing it's more, or there is more to consider than just what the Fed is doing. let's wrap it up with some quick comments on currencies, because the U.S. dollar, you can say, was almost in free fall this week, has rebounded a little bit at the end of the week, but that run through the first 3 months is being dissipated pretty quickly just this month. What's your assessment of the dollar, and why was it dropping so much on the back of good economic data?
Yeah, I think it's, for me, the dollar is kind of connected to that interest rate story. So, for example, one of the strongest currencies this week, the Mexican peso, it's appreciated almost every day this week. And Mexico offers 4%. It's an annualized rate on their local T-bills. The similar in the U.S. is at zero. So we've seen, we've seen portfolio flows go into Mexico trying to capture those high yields. And the falling U.S. yield environment just makes it more attractive, I think. It's interesting, though, thinking about the different performing currencies. Usually in a weak U.S. dollar environment like we've had, the Canadian dollar is a laggard behind the other majors. And sure enough, this week, the Canadian dollar is the weakest of the majors, even though next week the Bank of Canada meets and is likely to at least adjust its forward guidance, because they, too, can be more confident about the recovery and be signaling that tapering is likely before the end of the year.
All right, Mark, we will wrap it up here. A lot to take in on this interview, but again, just recapping the data that we saw from this week and some of these market moves that have changed general directions. You can also make that argument for some of the resources too, as they started to move higher this week as well. But let's not forget the U.S. equity market strength as well. Mark, great chatting with you. I'll post a link to your website, Mark2Market, and we will chat again next week. So, hey, Mark, have a great weekend.
Thanks a lot. Good luck, everybody.